And welcome once again to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and I'm inviting you to visit us online at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Many of you have signed up for our free Natural Nurse newsletter, and the newsletter is linked to information in natural medicine that you can use for yourself and your family if you'd like to use a more natural approach to life. And how you can get the newsletter for free is go to www.naturalnurse.com. That's all one word, naturalnurse.com. Go to the left-hand bottom part of the front page, and you'll see a place that just says free newsletter. The only information that's asked for is your email address, nothing else. Put your email address in, and you will start to get our newsletter. And if for any reason you decide you no longer want to get it, it's a very easy and easy to find unsubscribe button to get you off the list. But, you know, we almost never get that. We get hundreds of people signing up for it, but almost no one saying that they don't want to get it anymore, because it's such easy to use, excellent information about how you can take care of yourself and your family the natural way. While you're on the website at naturalnurse.com, I invite you to click on schedules, and you will see the many, many lectures that we're giving all over the country and, in fact, the world, and we might be in your area as well. So we do things like give outside herbal identification classes where we collect wild edible and medicinal plants and teach you how to make them into medicine for yourself and your family. And I got so much input back after tragic events such as the Hurricane Sandy in the Northeast and hurricanes in Florida, about how people used that information actually for survival in times when there is no access to easy access to food, to gasoline, to water. What you can do to survive with what you have on hand in that kind of situation. That's what we teach in our edible and medicinal plant medicine making workshop. We're also going to be in New York's Chinatown, where we give a class in Chinese medicine, the ancient traditions such as tongue and pulse diagnosis, doing qigong in the park, learning how herbals are made into medicine. And it's a full day. It's like going to another country. And if you do like to go to another country, we have our yearly excursion to live with shamanic healers in the jungle of Jamaica and Mexico around the world. Last year, our Jamaica trip was actually certified for 3 full college credits through Stony Brook University. And that class has been going on for over 20 years, as most of our classes have been. And there's a lot more local things, such as the Naval Expo, which happens both in New York City and Long Island. So almost every minute, in fact, today's show is being hosted at a presentation location where we're giving a lecture on vitality and anti-aging. And that starts right after the show. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And we do have a guest. Her name is Polly Halstead. And she is the author of an exquisite book called Primal Cuisine, Cooking for the Paleo Diet. Now, Polly began her professional culinary career in 1975, opening Polly's Cafe in San Francisco. And she brings many years of experience in fine California cuisine into her cookbook, Primal Cuisine, Cooking for the Paleo Diet. Her focus on fine food lovingly prepared is coupled with the paleo diet and the knowledge that the foods of our ancestors, which included such things as wild meat and fish, foraged plants, like we just talked about, learning how to do, nuts, seeds, and berries were the foods we humans evolved on and are still basic building blocks of optimum physical and mental health. In Primal Cuisine, Paulie discusses how adopting the paleo diet has helped her overcome many years of debilitating health issues, and she further educates in the book on topics of what modern foods best replicate the paleo diet, as well as the dangers of GMOs, gluten and casein intolerance, and how our food choices impact the environment. And for more information about her book or about her work, you can visit her website at theprimalcuisine.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Paulie.
Yes, thank you so much. I've been up since 5:30, so efficiently awake.
Yes, because our show is here at 10 a.m. on the East Coast, but you are joining us today from the West Coast. So
yes,
that's where we get the discrepancy in time. And, of course, we're also international now. That happens quite a bit. Now, I'd like to go back in time to what initiated your interest in providing food for people in the first place.
Oh, well, I think I was born with the I love to cook gene. So I think I started cooking and making things when I was about 11 years old. And, of course, my mother didn't mind. You know, she had a big family, and cooking, you know, was sort of at the bottom of the list that she liked to do, although she liked to bake, I have to say that. But I've always loved to cook, and I moved to Berkeley in the late 60s, and it was just seemed to be a culinary epicenter. You know, there were all these ethnic restaurants, and then Alice Waters started Chez Panisse, and, you know, the whole sort of California food movement, I think, originated in the Bay Area. So,
what did you study at Berkeley?
What did I study? Mm-hmm. I didn't actually go to Cal. I was living there. I had a young family, and my husband was an engineer. So, you know, my daughter was going to Montessori school. I did take some classes,
so
mostly
part of
in
the,
art.
You were part of that very interesting Berkeley scene.
Yes, it was very interesting and very volatile at that time. It was during People's Park and all the demonstrations and all of that was going on. There was a lot going on then. So it was very political and very stimulating. And but somehow I got interested in food. I had a friend who came over. We made Greek food. And, several years later, I moved to San Francisco, like in 1975, and I thought, well, you know, I want to open a restaurant. So me and my friend Scott drove around sort of Upper Pacific Heights there and saw this little cafe that was for sale. It was Joe's Hamburger Stand for 40 years, and it was attached to a barber shop. So we rented that space and remodeled it, and there we were.
So that was your first venture.
Yes, it was. And, boy, I'm telling you, it was trial by fire.
And what kind of foods did you offer in that initial space?
Well, we were very close to the Presbyterian Hospital, and it was sort of a neighborhood restaurant. So we served normal breakfasts and lunches that you would expect, homemade soups, good desserts. But at night, we kind of put the tablecloths on the tables and transformed it into a little kind of bistro-style restaurant and served kind of continental European food. So that's what we did.
So it wasn't necessarily with, like, a vegetarian focus or
a health food focus or a paleo focus?
Or
I have never
things.
Been a vegetarian, except briefly when I lived at a spiritual retreat center from about 2007 to 2009 in Hood River, Oregon, which was near Portland. And as I've said before, I had sort of lifelong depression and a multitude of health issues and all that type of thing, which was kind of debilitating all along. I never felt really great. I had a lot of stress. Anyway, I came across this book, The Ultramind Solution, by Dr. Mark Hyman. And I think I've explained before, my mother had schizophrenia, so I was always interested in the brain. So I read the book, and I was reading how all kinds of toxins go through the blood-brain barrier, especially gluten, sugar affects the brain and all this. So I decided to write my first cookbook, which was gluten-free and free of refined sugars, although at that time I didn't go all the way and take out honey, agave, and maple syrup from that book.
Okay, well, let's stop right there. So now, and we'll move ahead into your development of, and involvement with the paleo diet, since you brought those things up, and I don't want that thought to be lost.
Yeah.
So you kind of lumped sugar, agave nectar, and maple syrup all together.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of started out on a certain path of understanding, which now I feel I am continuing to read and incorporate and refine. So it was during the writing of that first cookbook that I met Nora Gagaudis. She became my nutritionist. She wrote Primal Body, Primal Mind and introduced me to the paleo diet, which is basically free of any sugars,
Well, any added sugars, because they include some fruit, like you might find berries.
Yeah, very low glycemic fruit. That's why it's mostly berries. But I still have some fruit in my cookbook. But
I want to tell our listeners that the cookbook is absolutely beautiful. It's full color. It's easy to read and follow. It's chock full of excellent recipes. Everything from stocking the pantry so you get ready if you'd like to work on the paleo diet with really beautiful organic food, like the picture of the organic eggs and the asparagus. And it's really widely vegetarian based, although the paleo diet is thought of being so high in animal products.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you bring that up. Actually, I have reduced the amount of protein that you need per day to around 45 to 60 grams spread out through the day and upped the amount of vegetables. I just feel like vegetables, especially fibrous vegetables, create sort of a prebiotic condition in your stomach and intestine. They start to ferment. They help to break down the food. And also, vegetables, as you know, they're really high in antioxidants and other co-nutrients. So I just feel like it's a vegetarian cookbook with some protein.
I mean, here's something that I wish I had some right now. It's called Summer Squash Soup with Mint Pesto. Just beautiful. And there's no meat in this recipe at all.
Right. And you can choose to incorporate chicken broths or other broths in your soups if you want. Or you can just make them straight vegetarian if you want. And make a homemade vegetable broth. I love to make homemade vegetable broth, too.
And you have great recipes for them. Now, I want to ask you a question because you brought up something that I am actually in the middle of researching, and I want our listeners to know this is not something that you may not know about it. So if you don't, you can just say you don't. But you mentioned the fact that there are different kinds of enzymes. For instance, there's food enzymes in food, which you mentioned, that the foods themselves may help with digestion. And then there's digestive enzymes that, of course, we make in our body. And those are the main enzymes involved in actually breaking down food. And I've actually been looking for some real science saying that when a food is raw, it still maintains its own food enzymes, which in and of itself help the food to be digested. But I really can't find any science about that.
I don't know as well. One thing I have been learning about is how beneficial good bacteria is for helping to digest our food. And the bacteria do a lot of the pre-digestive work. So I'm kind of paying attention to this science now.
That's definitely true. We certainly know that, and that is well documented. And of course, those excellent bacteria, which are our friendly bacteria, which is what we should have in our system, actually are very well known and very well documented, no questions asked, about their ability to form vitamins. For instance, all our B vitamins are formed from those bacteria within our digestive system. And what happens is, for instance, when people have gastric bypass surgery, they often lose the ability to even make their own B vitamins, which is what a lot of the negative side effects of that kind of surgery come from. So that's not questioned. I'm just wondering, listeners, I'll put that out to you. I'd love to see some good science saying that our food is digested when it's raw, when it contains more enzymes in terms of raw food. So that's a discussion for the raw foodists more so than what you talk about in your book, Paulie. But you have tons of information. Like, now tell us how you got involved with the paleo diet.
Well, when I was starting to write that first cookbook in 2009, someone handed me the book Primal Body, Primal Mind by Nora Gagaudis. She's a Portland-based neurofeedback specialist and nutritionist. And she had a little couple pages in the back of the book on this genetic disorder, pyroluria, although it's not recognized by some of the mainstream medical profession, but it is a severe vitamin B6 and zinc deficiency, which is one of the causes of schizophrenia. That really got my attention. There's a list of about 32 symptoms that she lists in the book, and I had over 20 of them. And for me, that was a clue. I called her right up and went to see her, and we did all these tests. The test for pyroluria is a $50 urine test. And I had inherited the genetic disorder, which accounted for a lot of my lifelong depression. And so she put me on vitamin B6 and zinc supplements, and that really helped a lot.
And it's not covered by health insurance, a lot of these tests. But like you said, it's not, you know, it's not going to break the bank. For most people, it's probably worth that investment to find out if that makes sense for you.
Totally. I think some of these tests are really inexpensive when you come to think of it, and it takes all the guessing out. Even I feel like going to a regular MD who's not skilled in nutrition, they're guessing a lot of the time, and we are not only paying good money for all that guessing, but then we're the guinea pigs with all the pharmaceuticals that they are testing on us.
Yes, and they overuse them. I'll give you a perfect example from my own life. My mom, who's 84 years old and in excellent health. She swims 2 miles every single day, God bless her. Us younger folk, and not that much younger, but certainly should be in as good shape as she is. But she did have to have hernia surgery, which is considered minor. She got the hernia surgery and was okay, but then she got a little stomach upset, probably from the surgery, and then they gave her a very strong drug called Flagyl. Oh. And she had a very severe reaction, and I would say almost died from the drug. She swelled up. She got rashes all over her body. Oh. She got every classic symptom. And I insisted then that they do a stool analysis, and sure enough, she did not even have any kind of organism that would indicate the use of such a deadly drug.
Terrible.
And they do that all the time.
I have had Flagyl. It's a terrible drug.
Exactly, but it was given just what your point was, strictly on a guess.
Yeah.
And inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
So you're so right. That happens all the time. So it was so good
time.
That you were able to find out through real testing that this symptom picture that you discovered, which was linked really to what? To various food allergies? Or what exactly was her point?
Okay. Well, the first test I had was from Intero Lab, and you can actually order this test online. It's a stool test. And that showed I was gluten intolerant, casein, soy, and egg. So then I I never thought I was intolerant to anything, but I think my lifelong symptoms were due to these low-grade allergies that I never realized I had. And then I did the next step, which is Thyrex Lab. Array number 4 is the test, but it tests for up to 24 other foods that your body may mistake for gluten. So when people go off, you know, the gluten-containing grains and they're still having symptoms, it's a clue that your body may be reading a certain food as gluten. And for me, when I had that test, it was egg. I was most cross-reactive with egg. So that test is a blood test, and it has to be ordered by a doctor or a licensed nutritionist. But I'm telling you, it is a state-of-the-art test, and you can really cut to the chase with a lot of other food allergies there.
Can you once again mention where you got that test?
Yes, with the Thyrex Lab test, I had to have Nora, my nutritionist, order it. But if you're working with a nutritionist or a doctor, they can order the test as well. You have to go to a lab and have your blood drawn.
Well, I'll tell you, we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I do want to mention that I believe you have a lot of these tests listed under the resources in the back of your book.
I do.
You do. So you make it super easy. I mean, this book could change your life. And it's also gorgeous and full of some of the best recipes I've ever seen.
Oh,
a real focus on raw, a real focus on vegetarian, but delicious cooked food and clean protein, which we'll talk about when we come back. You are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. That is Gary Null's network. And we're so happy to be a part of the family of excellent shows right here on Progressive Radio Network. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion right after this Natural Medicine Chest.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back once again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. And you can find Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. And always, excellent shows. Gary Null's shows are here and many other interesting topics that you will find right here on Progressive Radio Network. And today, we are looking at the book, at least I'm looking at the book, and I suggest you look at the book, by Pauli Halsted called Primal Cuisine. And Pauli has been involved in natural cooking and in food preparation for many, many years. She had a restaurant back in 1975 called Pauli's Cafe. And in this book, she talks about the Paleo diet, and actually the subname of the book, Primal Cuisine, is called Cooking for the Paleo Diet. And in Primal Cuisine, Pauli discusses how adopting the Paleo diet has helped her overcome many years of debilitating health issues, and she has shared that with us already to some point. And she wrote the book as a compendium to Primal Body, Primal Mind, Beyond the Paleo Diet for Total Health and Longer Life, by Nora Gedgaudas. I don't know how to spell her name.
Oh, it's Nora Gedgaudas.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And also, Pauli discusses in her book which modern foods replicate the paleo diet, the dangers of GMO, gluten, and casein intolerance. And let's move forward with talking about meat, because of course the paleo diet, the first thing most people think is it's completely meat centered.
Yeah, well, that turns out not to be true. And the other thing, you know, during those Paleolithic times, the part of the animal that was eaten were the fattiest parts. It was more a fat-based diet than a real lean meat-based diet, and this is what people really need to wrap their brains around. So they ate the brain, the heart, the liver, the bone marrow, because it was very nutritious. A lot of nutrients are in the fat, and it was a ketogenic diet. It was a fat-burning diet, not a glucose-burning diet. You know, we're all pretty much eating a glucose-based diet now, but a ketogenic diet is very different, and it's very sustaining, energy-producing, and they're using it now to help people with cancer, certain kind of brain problems. They find that ketones work a lot better.
Well, that was what the Atkins diet was based on. I worked with Dr. Atkins when he was alive.
That's right. You
mentioned that. Very much was, of course, trying purposefully to put people into ketosis.
Right. I'm not sure that I have totally gone that direction, but I really try to keep my carbs and starches and sugars to a minimum, say under 50 grams a day. You really have to work at it these days.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Now, you do talk about meat, though, but we're not just talking about going in and getting some hot dogs and bologna. You know, let's really talk about, in your book, Primal Cuisine, the kind of animal products that you might be focusing on.
Okay, well, there's a growing movement now of raising cattle and pigs on exclusively grass and not any kind of grain supplementation at all, even if it's organic grains. because the grass-fed meat retains the omega-3 fatty acids. We evolved on a high amount of omega-3 fatty acids that were in the wild meat and wild fish, and our brains and hearts still need a tremendous amount of omega-3s for a healthy diet.
And where do people find these omega-3s? Because, you know, there certainly are vegetarian sources of omega-3s as well. If we look at something like chia seeds, flax seeds, they have quite a bit of omega-3s.
They do. My personal feeling is that they aren't enough, and I believe we still need the animal cholesterol, and we still need vitamin B12 that only comes in animal, you know, products. So
it is difficult. Now, of course, if people are vegan or vegetarian and they come to me for health issues in my clinic, I have a clinic on Long Island, and Dr. Eugene Zamperone, our co-host, has a clinic in Connecticut, and of course we see patients day and night, actually. And if they're not feeling well, we do a lot of these evaluative tests that you point out and you give links to in your book. And the thing is, if a person is vegan or very strictly vegetarian, the first thing I will ask them is if they are doing that diet as a religious concept. In other words, you know, they're totally against killing any animals. Let's say like the Jains in India won't even step on an ant, which I can honor. Or people sometimes choose a kosher diet for spiritual and religious reasons, which I can honor and will work with that. But if they're doing it for health, they're very often mistaken, because we will pick up through these analytical methods that you discussed certain deficiencies which really are due to the restriction of animal products.
Yes. People, I do feel, need quite a lot of guidance if they're going to go that direction. So I'm not an expert on giving, you know, that kind of guidance. I did live with a woman up in Oregon who had never eaten meat. She wouldn't even eat eggs. And she was very young, was severely bipolar, and also had rheumatoid arthritis at a very early age. So I don't feel like she really understood, you know, the importance of some nutrients. And her diet was mostly grain-based, which was also added problems.
Which is so often true. And people who are vegetarians, they're eating tons of brown rice.
Yeah.
They're eating, and sometimes it's even worse. I've seen, especially young people, who get into, let's say, an animal rights movement, which I totally support. But then they'll make the decision to be vegetarian. So what they'll do is stop eating any animal products, but instead eat tons of junk food.
That's what she did. She ate a lot of candy, a lot of sweets and everything. Finally, you know, finally I got mad at her. I said, hey, you know, you got to eat some eggs, girl. Anyway.
Right. So that can be very imbalanced as well. So all of these things people can decide for themselves. But one thing about the paleo diet, it is certainly proven that this is the ancient human diet.
You know, somebody, I met this microbiologist, Compton Rombeta. He comes to our town and gives lectures sometimes. And he said something that really struck me. You know, we have all these bacteria, evolutionary bacteria, that live in our gut. And he said they have memory. And what they remember is the original primal diet. And so a lot of our gut bacteria is not recognizing some of these, you would call them foods that we have now. And so there's a huge upset war going on in our intestines. And I think this is what happened to me. When I started on the paleo diet, I healed my gut, and therefore I healed my brain problem, my depression, you know, my anxiety. It all kind of self-corrected.
Now, how did you start on this path? What were the first steps that you personally took in your kitchen?
Oh, okay. I met Nora. She became my nutritionist. And got me going on the paleo diet. I started to eat more nutritious meats. more nutritious fats. I eliminated grains and sugars, even the honey and agave and maple syrup and all that. And within 3 months, I had corrected my depression, which never came back. Of course, I was supplementing with vitamin D3, B6, and zinc. And I lost about 10 or 15 pounds without even trying. You know, all those vegetarian grain brown rice dinners had packed on the pounds. So anyway, yeah, it was just a whole change that happened. My body self-corrected and self-adjusted within 3 months.
So, you know, let's talk about like a typical day diet that you would now use or that you would recommend if somebody did want to try this. And by the way, of course, a lot of the recipes are in your book, Primal Cuisine, Cooking for the Paleo Diet. So how would someone begin? I mean, they'd have to look around in their kitchen and their refrigerator and their kitchen cabinets and look at what they are ingesting every day. In fact, for every single patient that I have, they have to bring in a 3-day diet diary, even at our first consult. Because many times people just don't even have any idea of what they're putting in their mouth.
Yeah, and I definitely think that's a good idea. You know, we're so used to being creatures of habit that we just grab the cereal box or grab the smoothie and put a lot of extra fruit and honey in there, a lot of added sugars that people ingest when they're having those smoothies. I think having smoothies with more green stuff is probably better. I just eat, you know, when I found out I was most cross-reactive with egg, there went my eggs sort of out the window, so sometimes I just have 3 strips of organic grass-fed bacon for breakfast. Bacon is good.
Well, how would you know that a particular bacon does not have all kinds of toxic chemicals in it, such as nitrates and nitrites and many of the things in processed meats that I know you do not recommend?
Yeah, well, you have to read the label, and you have to know who your producers are. That's why in the back of my cookbook, I have the American Grass-Fed Association, Eat Wild, which is a really good website, so you know who the reputable producers are. Now, in California, we have Leno Seco Bacon. The producer is over here by Chico. You can go on their website. You can see how they raise their pigs, what they feed their pigs. They let their pigs run around. They're not in pens. Because I'm a big animal rights activist, too, I think it's really important. And for me, that goes along with the whole paleo lifestyle, is taking care of the environment and making sure our animals are humanely raised. It all goes together.
Well, I'll tell you, as a farmer myself, and I had a completely off-the-grid farm when my children were born, who are now approaching 40, so it's been a little while, and I raised all my own animals, and I killed them myself at the correct time, you know, and I'll tell you, it was actually a very spiritual experience. They had fabulous lives, they were happy and healthy, and you know, although in a way, of course, it's always sad when you think about killing, but the fact is that done humanely, it felt just like a natural part of life. And of course, the way that those animals tasted is completely different than something that's commercially raised on grain, because ours were just raised out in a field, you know, natural feed, very little supplementation of any kind, and lots of love, and a lot of spirituality, which you talk about, love and spirituality. It's not just all macro and micro chemical molecules. And when those young animals were born, I would actually bless them because I was there to birth them. I welcomed them into the world, and I discussed with them at their birth that they were very much going to be a part of our family, and we mean even literally a part of ourselves. And all that was a discussion and an intention and an energy exchange. So those kinds of things might be unmeasurable, but are actually very, very real.
Very real. And, yeah, what you just said just gave me goosebumps because, you know, that is the way that we have to treat our animals, treat our planet. They are a part of us, and we are using them for nourishment, and we must be grateful and appreciate that.
Well, you know, there's a lot of politics, too, involved here because, unfortunately, even within the grass-fed movement, I'm sure you're aware that the organic regulations and the FDA just seems to be committed to not allowing people to raise food naturally. And they're even having all kinds of laws saying that even supposedly grass-fed chickens actually have to be kept indoors most of the time, and they're only allowed a little teeny place to poke their head out, and they can then be called free range. It's just terrible.
It's insane. I mean, we're being literally herded into this commercial food growing and raising system that there's no possibility for any freedom or variation. It's very disturbing.
It is. So that's just, you know, a political discussion because it could say on it USDA organic. And like you said, what I do about that is actually try to meet the growers, meet the suppliers, go there and see the place if I can, or at least talk to the owner, because that's really the only way. That USDA organic certificate is not a guarantee of the kind of raising that you're talking about.
That's very true. Up here we have Jim Gates, who has Nevada County Free Range Beef, and this is the way he raises his cattle. And, you know, he's one of our local heroes. But yeah, get to know your producer. My daughter lives in Martinez in the Bay Area, and very close to where she lives. She gets lamb. You know, she goes out. The lady raises her own sheep out there. So, yeah, I mean, take an active interest in your food, where it comes from, and who your producer is.
That is great advice. Now, one of the things that you shared with us before is something called the Monterey Bay Aquarium website. Why would someone be interested in that?
Well, as we all know, our oceans are in dire straits now. Now we have the Fukushima nuclear accident. For many years, we've had mercury in our oceans. So sourcing quality fish is really problematic, not to mention the fact that we've overfished. So the Monterey Bay Aquarium website just has everything you want to know about the health of our oceans, which fish to buy, and definitely steer clear of farmed fish for the very same reason that you're going to steer clear of commercially raised animals.
Well, we will talk about that more when we get back. And at this point, we're going to take one more break. We're here with Pauli Halstead. She is the author of an amazingly informative and beautiful book called Primal Cuisine. And her website for more information is theprimalcuisine.com. Of course, you can always find out about any of our guests by visiting us through Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or naturalnurse.com. You are listening to us right here on Progressive Radio Network, Gary Nell's network at PRN.FM. So we'd like to take a little break and let you know about more of the wonderful shows that you can listen to right here on Progressive Radio Network, and then we'll be right back. And thank you so much. Welcome back to more right here on Progressive Radio Network. And, of course, you can find us at PRN.FM. And this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, your host, along with Eugene Zampro, naturopathic physician. And we've been partners for many, many years. And we do a lot of things, including we have written many books. You can find them on naturalnurse.com under books. We also give courses where you can be certified in various levels of natural medicine, such as homeopathy, herbal medicine, botanical pharmacology, going to whatever level you're interested in proceeding to. And if you go to naturalnurse.com under education, you will see that. We also have a section on career counseling where we meet with you. Maybe you enjoy listening to this show and many of the shows here on Progressive Radio Network, and you'd like to integrate natural medicine into your life, not only personally but professionally. Well, we have a career counseling seminar that we do over the phone and the internet that lets you find out how you can be trained in natural medicine. So all those things are available to you, Facebook The Natural Nurse or naturalnurse.com. Today we have as our guest the author of Primal Cuisine, Cooking for the Paleo Diet, and her name is Pauli Halsted. If you want to know more about her work, then visit her website at theprimalcuisine.com. The book is absolutely beautiful and will really give you a head start. And I think, Pauli, and welcome back to the show, that your book is, you know, even if somebody doesn't want to make a complete commitment to the paleo diet, just the recipes alone are just fabulous and worth integrating into anybody's healthy lifestyle.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, as you know, I was a longtime chef, and I had a very successful catering company in the Napa Valley for over 20 years. And sourcing my ingredients was really important to me. I chose everything myself. You know, I went to the farmer's market. You know, at that time I was really into breads, so I would drive back down to Berkeley because they had, you know, the best bakeries there. But later on, you know, we had some bakeries up in the wine country that fired their bread in wood ovens. So I was really into breads at one point. But quality was really important to me.
Yes, and continues to be, as you can see in a lot of these beautifully, beautifully indicated recipes. Now, one of the things you do is you do a lot in terms of discussion of quality ingredients. So although we've been talking about how to source better meat products, you really can't eat commercial meat because it probably has been fed hormones. It's been fed genetically modified food itself, as well as all the genetically modified foods that people are ingesting directly. Why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Let's talk about the grains that they feed cattle. Now, grains, because they have a phytic acid coating, that becomes an irritant to the intestines of the cattle. So their intestines become inflamed, so then they give them antibiotics and hormones. That goes into the meat and fats. The genetically modified grains also stay, you know, the GMO ingredients still stay in the meat and fats. So all these things that go into commercially raised animals stay in the meat and fats, and then when we eat them, they stay in our bodies as toxins. That's why everybody's sick.
Well, what do you think is wrong with genetically modified plants? Because almost every single thing that is either soy or corn now, unless it's listed as organic, is genetically modified. So, and of course, there's no labeling at all. Even in California, the labeling law got defeated.
Yeah, terrible. Well, this is why I tell people, stick with organic and know the way that your produce is raised, know the way your animals are raised, and steer clear of GMOs and GMO grains.
And that's, of course, a little bit easier said than done. Even if we do manage to get GMO labeling, and I certainly promote everyone to work in their own state on getting genetically modified laws passed. And as we speak today in the Congress, in the U.S. Congress, there's a law that is being passed that will limit the state's ability to allow genetically modified as a label, believe it or not.
Yeah, it, Yeah, it's really insidious. I look for the label now because people who are, you know, producing products that are GMO-free have a little, it looks like a stamp on the box or the product that says GMO-free. So look for that.
Yes, it's a GMO project, and it has a little kind of leaf insignia. The thing is, I just want to say, in terms of animal products, even if someone says they're feeding their animals on grass, et cetera, there's not going to be any labeling if that animal was also fed GMOs. There's just no way to really track that.
You have to be very careful. Now, you know, there are certain beef producers in California who say grass-fed. The label, and you look for this in the store, it must say grass-finished.
That's a good trick. Tell us again.
there is labeling now, and the American Grass-Fed Association is spearheading this, that says grass-finished because, you know, most cows are started on grass. But it's then when they're put in those pens and finished on grains to fatten them that, you know, then that becomes problematic. Even if the grains are organic, it's going to change the meat and fat profile to omega-6 fatty acid, and that's the difference. We want to stay with the omega-3 fatty acids. That's why grass finishing is of primary importance.
Yes, it certainly is, and that is very good. I actually didn't know that. That's why I've been doing radio all these years. I've been doing radio for 30 years, because every single show, you know, no matter how much you know, there's always more to learn, and every guest gives me little jewels and extends my knowledge, and I had no idea about that. Do they actually have a label on there saying grass finished?
Yeah.
I've never seen that. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's starting to happen, but your butcher should know. And this, again, I mean, know the producer. Now in California, we have the ranch where the meat comes from, you know, like Neiman Ranch or whatever. And there was a big upset in Marin County when Bill Neiman separated from Neiman Ranch because they were finishing their cows on grains, even if the grains were organic. So he split from the company and started BN Ranch, and now he does exclusive grass finishing. So you have to be on top of the politics here.
Yes, so much so, so much so. And, you know, there's even so many more beautiful details in your book. For instance, somebody may think, okay, well, I'm going to be eating healthy fats, so I'll incorporate olive oil. But you have an entire section on the fact that even if it says olive oil, which is extra virgin, it might not be.
There again, know your producer, know where your olive oil comes from. You know, in California, in the wine country, everybody started raising olive trees, so a lot of the wineries got the equipment and were pressing their own olive oil. So I got really into olive oils, too. But, you know, definitely stick with organic and extra virgin olive oil when you're buying.
Well, even that, what I have found is that the California certification is much stricter. So I personally stick with California-raised olives, which are probably, you know, which are hand-picked. I'll actually call the producer. I like Bozzano quite a bit. You don't mention them in your book, but you have other excellent family olive oil in your book, because we know that in Europe they may say all that on there like extra virgin, but yet they pour in less quality oils.
They definitely do that. I know some olive oil producers in, you know, Italy and Spain and you know, Greece are organic, but I would trust the California olive oils over anything.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today. And again, we have been talking to Polly Halstead, and she is the author of Primal Cuisine, Cooking for the Paleo Diet. You can find her at www.theprimalcuisine.com. And her show will be archived at our site, Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. Hopefully we'll be bringing back all the archives on there as well. It's a fabulous station. And this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. Until next time, we're hoping that you visit us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And stay healthy.